Today we'll start Ruth chapter 3, but first I wanted to talk about one thing that I mentioned last week, which was the ages of both Ruth and Boaz, and they put Ruth at 40 years old and Boaz at 80, and I looked up the source of that, and it was the Jewish Talmud, which they found in the Dead Sea Scrolls in the 1950s, and they found this the Talmud manuscript. There might have been others, but anyway, this is at least one, and they placed it at 200 to 400 BC to be written, and then it got put in the caves in these vessels and sealed up in these caves. But anyway, that's, and this Talmud was like commentary, Jewish scholars commenting, and it was the commentary of the Old Testament, and they would explain what had been passed down to them. So anyway, that's where this age, which it seems that both of those are high on these ages. Ruth, at being 40, seems too high, and Boaz, being at 80 years old, seems also high. But anyway, that was from the Jewish scholars, what got passed down to them, and they wrote it in the Talmud and found them in the Dead Sea Scrolls. So that is the source of these ages of Ruth and Boaz. Okay, now Ruth chapter 3, the harvest may be mostly over. Kaufman thought that it was. Now, I don't know, it's not mentioned about that, but he thinks that the harvest is over. Now they're just threshing the grain and separating the wheat, the grain from the chaff. And but there's no more harvesting. So if so, something like a couple of months has passed. But anyway, Naomi has come up with a brilliant plan. Number one, she's thinking of Ruth. She had mentioned in chapter one, she was praying that they would be both Ruth and Orpah, that they would both find husbands. Well, she can't do anything for Orpah because, you know, she took Naomi's advice and went back to her own people. And so you're probably, most certainly, she found a husband among the Moabites. But anyway, Ruth here, Ruth and Naomi are both basically kind of like destitute to some degree. Now, God has already made provision, as we've seen, of how they can get grain, and I guess store up enough grain for a year to survive until the next harvest. But it's still going to be very hard times. And so she wants Ruth to get a husband. And then also, this is a double, two-sided coin. She wants her to get a husband, and then she doesn't want her lineage to die out. And so she comes up with a plan that satisfies everything. And the commentators think that this is an absolutely brilliant plan. Naomi obviously knew all the ins and outs and fully understood the law of Moses, understood all of the Israelite customs. And so, putting all of this together, she came up with this plan of how to get Ruth to marry Boaz and then extend their lineage through this levirate marriage system, custom. Okay, so Ruth chapter 3, verse 1. Then Naomi, her mother-in-law, said to Ruth, "My daughter, shall I not seek security for you, that it may be well with you?" So this security is, have someone to take care of you. Right now, they're both kind of helping each other, but Naomi is elderly, and she knows she's not going to be around that much longer. And then Ruth would be all by herself in a foreign land with nobody. So she's really thinking about Ruth and caring for her and trying to secure her future. So this is talk of this. Seek security means seeking a husband for you. Verse 2. Now Boaz, whose young women you were with, is he not our relative? In fact, he is winnowing barley tonight at the threshing floor. And this was separating the wheat from the chaff. And so Kaufman said that the wind would get up more at night than in the daytime here coming off of the Mediterranean Sea. And so at night they would have a good breeze. And so they would, that's when they would either throw up the grain, or Clark said that they would pour the grain with all the chaff in a funnel, and then as it fell down through this funnel, then the chaff would blow away. So however it was, they were separating the wheat from the chaff in the wind. And so Kaufman said he didn't know how Naomi knew that he was going to be working that night, which I figured during harvest, that's what they were doing every night. They were harvesting in the day, and then they were working on this threshing and winnowing and separating the wheat from the chaff at night, at least 2 or 3 hours every night to try to catch up. So you're not just, you have a mountain piled and you haven't done anything. So I figure they're doing some every night. But Kaufman thought that all the harvest is over and somehow she knew. But I don't see that was that difficult for her to know where Boaz would be at a certain time on a certain night and what he would be doing. But anyway, she knew that he was going to be working at this certain threshing floor, which I don't know if this was a public threshing floor or if this was his personal, which he owned so much land and was such a wealthy man. He probably had his own place and all, and he's going to sleep there tonight. So I'm assuming this is his own personal. So I don't see that it'd be hard to figure out where he would have been. But anyway, verse 3. Therefore, wash yourself and anoint yourself, put on your best garment and go down to the threshing floor, but do not make yourself known to the man until he has finished eating and drinking. So, none of the commentators commented on this, but how I kind of read between the lines of what was going on here. Boaz had other workers here working with him. They were all working to thresh this grain. And she goes in, she goes through this custom of anointing herself, washing herself, putting on the best garment. But he said, don't make yourself known. So I imagine she covered her face up with the veil. And he had all these workers. Everybody was working hard. And he just didn't notice her. I figure she probably just stood in the background with this veil, and he was all about business and doing all this hard work. And they had a very successful harvest this year, the first successful harvest they'd had in a long time, in some 10 years. But anyway, so now she has to wait until he's finished eating his supper, and then verse 4, then it shall be when he lies down that you shall notice the place where he lies, and you shall go in, uncover his feet, and lie down, and he will tell you what you should do. Now, this sounds like a very strange practice, definitely, and a custom to us, but it was not strange to them. This was the common way of a marriage proposal or of the woman letting a man know that she was ready for marriage or something. And so this was a common practice. This, nothing here was out of the ordinary. The only thing I guess that was out of the ordinary here is Boaz, some 80 years old, and he's been unmarried this whole time. Is probably I'm assuming it's probably the first time this has ever happened to him. But it's not. He's not unknown to this. He knows about this custom. So that is not that part is not strange, even though it sounds very, very strange to us. So verse 5. And she said to her, "All that you say to me, I will do." So Ruth says to Naomi, "I will do everything that you say." So that's what she's going to do. She's going to follow these orders to a T. Verse 6. So she went down to the threshing floor and did according to all that her mother-in-law instructed her. And Boaz had eaten and drunk, and his heart was cheerful. He went to lie down at the end of the heap of grain, and she came softly, uncovered his feet, and laid down. Verse 8. Now it happened at midnight that the man was startled and turned himself, and there was a woman lying at his feet. So now that would... That's understandable. He was definitely startled here. Who knows what time? We'll just say at least by 10 o'clock at night and maybe closer to 8 or 7. I don't know how much past dark that they would have worked by candlelight. But anyway, I'll say he's been asleep at least a couple of hours when he wakes up at midnight out of a dead sleep. And there's somebody laying at his feet. And here it is, pitch black. He can't see anything. No lights like we're fortunate to have in a modern day. No flashlight or anything. So, verse 9, he says, "Who are you?" So she answered, "I am Ruth, your maidservant. Take your maidservant under your wing, for you are a close relative." So, this "take your servant under your wing" phrase is a terminology for this levirate marriage. And so she's requesting that he extend her dead husband's lineage. And really, Elimelech's lineage is who is extended here. Because Naomi and Elimelech, they have no heir. So really, this is their lineage is what this is extending. And so, but she lets him know right off, "You are a close relative, and I'm requesting a levirate marriage from you." Protection plus this extending Naomi's lineage that otherwise it's going to die out here. Verse 10. Then he said, "Blessed are you of the Lord, my daughter, for you have shown more kindness at the end than at the beginning, in that you did not go after young men, whether poor or rich." So, he picks up immediately, and he knows exactly what Ruth is requesting. And also, he knows that this whole plan, Ruth didn't come up with any of this. Naomi is behind all of this, and he's going to give some grain to Ruth here in a little bit for her to take back to Naomi. So he knows that Naomi's behind all of this, and he picks up on it immediately, and he blesses Ruth right off the bat. And this statement that he makes, that you've shown more kindness at the end than at the beginning. Well, at the beginning, she showed lots of kindness by leaving her hometown and her home culture and people, coming to a foreign culture, now being a Israelite proselyte, a Israelite convert, and leaving the pagan god. Well, that was a lot of kindness that she showed at the beginning, but he's telling her that by you extending Naomi's lineage and not letting that lineage die out by accepting to marry a foreigner to her and through this levirate marriage, that that's more kindness. Plus, he said that she could have gone after a young man, so he's obviously not a young man, and the Jewish Talmud puts him at 80 years old, so here he is at toward the end of life. And he's letting her know that she could have tried to marry a young man, and it would not have extended the lineage since it was not in the same family through a levirate marriage. And then Naomi's lineage would have died off. And so he's really praising her here. Verse 11. And now, my daughter, do not fear. I will do for you all that you request. For all the people of my town know that you are a virtuous woman. So he's still praising her. And he let her know that he's going to do, he is accepting this. Now, what Ruth doesn't know, there's some other things that have to go on here, because there's a relative that's closer than he is that is first in line for this levirate marriage. And so he's got to go before a council of the elders and give the option of this closer relative first. But he's going to take care of all of that. So, which verse 12 here. Now it is true that I am a close relative. However, there is a relative closer than I. And verse 13. Stay this night, and in the morning it shall be that if he will perform the duty of a close relative for you, then good. Let him do it. But if he does not want to perform the duty for you, then I will perform the duty for you as the Lord lives. Lie down until morning. So, he let her know that he's not first in line, the closest relative, but he's going to go and see if this closer relative is willing to perform this levirate marriage and extend the lineage. But if he is not, then he will perform the duty.